This is Liner Note Leftovers, your weekly musical discovery hosted by 106.1 The Goat's resident crate digger, Dan Soul. Let's dive in.
All right, my lovelies, welcome to another Liner Note Leftovers, episode 11. We're digging through those virtual crates once again. We're digging in between the lines of your favorite albums, and we're talking about a whole lot of weird rock and roll stories. This week, we got how being kicked out of Black Sabbath is actually not that bad for your career. And I'm not talking about Ozzy this time. I'm talking about somebody else. We're digging into the Liner Note Leftovers archives to talk about how Iggy Pop took on a whole biker gang, amazingly did not get killed, and came out the winner, even though it broke up his band in the meantime. And we're talking about how Tom Petty slipped on pee at Costco, and it got him a $53,000 cash settlement. Okay, not Tom Petty, but if you know what I'm referencing, I bet you're going to be pretty excited for that one. And if you don't, well, you're going to know by the end of it. So let's not waste any more time. Lay the needle down. Let's get into another Liner Note Leftovers. There's one of two reactions you can take when you're kicked out of a legendary band. You can crumble and cry and it'll be all over for your career, or you can say, screw you guys, I'm leaving and I'm starting another band. And that is exactly what happened in the case of Ronnie James Dio and Black Sabbath, and would eventually lead to the creation of Dio's Holy Diver, which dropped May 25th, 1983. Now, I don't want anybody to get twisted now. Dio was established in the metal community before his Black Sabbath days. He was in Rainbow, he was in Elf, people knew who he was. That's how he got picked up by Black Sabbath. But Black Sabbath in 1982 was kind of a battle of the egos. During the recording of the 1982 album Live Evil, things came to such a head that either Dio was kicked out of Black Sabbath or he left of his own accord. It really depends on who you ask. But without it, we would have never had Holy Diver, because Dio leaves and Warner Brothers Records asks him, hey, do you want to just work on a project on your own? He says, sure. He gets Jimmy Bain from his Rainbow days, steals Vinny a piece from Black Sabbath, and hires up a 20-year-old Northern Irish guitar whiz named Vivian Campbell. You know Vivian because in 92 he joined Def Leppard as a replacement for Steve Clark. And they get to work on Holy Diver, which Dio writes all the lyrics to. The music is largely composed by Ronnie James Dio, and all the production work, Ronnie James Dio, guys bouncing back and forth in the booth, mixing, singing, going. And when you put that much passion into a project, you start thinking, oh man, it might not be time for me to release this. And that's where Dio was actually getting to, including cutting songs like Rainbow in the Dark completely off the track list. He thought it was too poppy, it didn't belong on the album, but the rest of the band says, no, Ronnie, you're good, play it. So they finally get all the tracks together and they release Holy Diver. Which, another fun fact about Holy Diver, is the first appearance of Murray, Ronnie James Dio's legendary devil character. And the album cover shows him thrashing a priest with a chain, which did lead many faith-based leaders, concerned parents, the PMRC, that kind of thing, to say, oh, this is occult. Dio just says, hey, you never know, that priest could be attacking that devil. Don't judge a book by its cover, which, come on, guys, it's pretty black and white, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But what I'm not wrong about is that Holy Diver became one of the biggest metal albums of the year and one of the biggest metal albums of all time, incorporating the battle of good and evil, fantasy themes, gothic horror, all into this great little package. It's been rocked several times over, it's been covered, it's even been parodied a couple of times. Depending on how Dio feels, he can either be worried or happy with it, because he ended up singing backup vocals for Pat Boone, Christian crooner Pat Boone, on his In a Metal Mood album, but was also worried that South Park wasn't going to do it justice when they used it on their show. But Dio says he was worried they were going to completely destroy him, but in the end they were very kind to him. Not so much Vinny Appice, but definitely to him. And he says, if you want to be an icon, you have to be on an episode of South Park. But I don't know, man. I think he was an icon before that, as we listen to Holy Diver right here, right now. Too long in the midnight sea. Oh. There's been a lot of great urban legends in the history of rock and roll. Play Zeppelin backwards, you can hear messages from the devil. Phil Collins watched a guy drown one time. You can see Anton LaVey on the cover of Hotel California. If you listen to the Ohio Players Love Roller Coaster, you can hear somebody screaming and they die. But what's even better is when it's not made up. When the story is completely 100% true, and that is true in the case of Kiss and Marvel Comics, who on May 26th, 1977, saw their collaborative issue of Marvel Super Special Comics number 1 get dropped at newsstands around the world. Gene Simmons, Ace Frehley, Paul Stanley, and Peter Criss fighting Mephisto and Doctor Doom. It had cameos from the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, the Defenders. But Kiss in 1977 was really starting to come into their own in the promotional sense. I mean, they had just done Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park, which was hot garbage, but I mean, it got their name out there. They were on all sorts of tchotchkes and toys and that kind of thing. But Kiss is like, hey, people love us for our blood dripping wild antics. Let's print a comic book in our blood. So right before a concert stop, they fly to New York, have their blood literally drawn. And I mean, Kiss did still have their days of partying, so like, thank God each of them getting a small pint of blood taken out of them did not have too much of an adverse effect. But you might be thinking, Dan, but where's the evidence? They can say that they did it. Well, the entire process was overseen by a blood donor clinic, a camera crew was taken along, and all of it was authenticated by an actual notary public. It was securely locked up and taken to the Borden ink plant where Marvel Comics are printed. But aside from the promotional aspect, you might still be wondering, but what did comic book nerds get out of it? Well, according to a 4-page one-shot within that issue, writer Stark Raven said that when this magazine goes to the press, those vials would be lovingly poured into vats of ink, making the first comic ever to be printed in blood. A bond now exists and forevermore among Kiss and their fans and Marvel Comics. A blood brotherhood of truth, justice, and rock and roll. Which sounds like some creepy ass stuff that emo kids said to each other before they did the little blood vial thing. Y'all don't remember that? Or was did I just grow up around freaks? Either way, if you get your hands on a copy of Marvel Comics Super Special Number 1, and good luck, because you'll pay anywhere from $500 to $1,500 for a good condition copy of it, you will know you will have something very special. The blood of the band members of Kiss. I'm sure it's dried by now, and you're not going to get that irony smell that might get you investigated, though, so that's a win, I guess? Iggy Pop, the real wild child himself. One thing you gotta know about this dude is you never knew what you were getting when you went to a Stooges show. Was Iggy Pop gonna be so messed up he couldn't play? Would he show up in a dress? Was he gonna try and fight the audience while still wearing 3-inch heels? Was he gonna let the audience attack him, cutting and burning and carrying on like a maniac? Nobody knew, and it really came to a head when the Stooges played a bar in Wayne, Michigan. Now in the audience was a biker gang called the Scorpions. And so Iggy Pop gets the brilliant idea, oh, there's a room full of burly, tough bikers, what do I do? How about I play a 45-minute version of Louie Louie, where I just make up choruses insulting the Scorpions biker gang? So, because they have a prospect that is doing his initiation, they say, prospect, throw eggs at Iggy Pop. And he does. He just starts hucking eggs at Iggy Pop, and Iggy Pop's like, I'm gonna fight this biker. He jumps out into the crowd and immediately gets his ass kicked. Like, it's not even close. He gets dummied by this biker. But what happens next is a point of controversy. Iggy Pop says he got up on stage covered in his own blood and finished that 45-minute rendition of Louie Louie, but Lester Bang says he was so knocked out that it just couldn't go on. It couldn't happen. But what is true is the next day, Iggy Pop gets on the Detroit radio station WABX-FM and dares the Scorpions to show up again at their next show on February 9th. One of the bikers calls up and says, yeah, we'll be there. And of course, they do. And they huck bottles at them so badly that they have to get off stage. And after that, the Stooges called it quits. In no small part, thanks to the unpredictability of their singer, but With the help of David Bowie and a trip to Germany, somehow that worked, he got clean, and the Stooges played a Together show again in 2003. We still remember the dude as a real wild child, and I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg of the crazy stories. But when you're making songs like I Wanna Be Your Dog in the Stooges days, it's gonna get weird. It's gonna get weird. So when hell freezes over. Those infamous words were broken May 27th, 1994, when the Eagles reunioned for the first time since 1980. Of course, the tour's name taken from a very famous Don Henley quote, "The Eagles will get back together when hell freezes over." Of course, you need to understand where the bad blood kind of was and why people thought it would never happen. The recording of the Eagles' The Long Run took 18 months. It was an insanely stressful process that saw the threats of fistfights and breakups, and Don Henley got an ulcer. Like, it was a bad time all around. So the marriage was already dissolving. But the day the Eagles broke up was when they all agreed to play a fundraiser for California Center Alan Cranston, who, fun fact, one of his pamphlets was also the inspiration for the name of the band Megadeth. That ultimately became known as the Long Night at Wrong Beach, where Don Felder and Glenn Frey almost came into fistfights, especially after Felder was seen being disrespectful to the senator. So nothing's happening for the Eagles for the next 14 years. Joe Walsh is doing his solo thing, playing with Ringo Starr, doing session work, running for president a couple of times. Timothy Schmidt, he's being a backup singer. Don Felder did a bunch of choice tracks on the heavy metal soundtrack and then just dipped. Don Henley's having a good solo time. Glenn Frey released 4 albums. He was on Miami Vice. He even had a show of his own called South of Sunset, where he played a detective. It flopped. It only had 1 episode, so I don't blame if you saw it. But it was actually, strangely enough, country singer Travis Tritt who got them back together. They all appeared in the music video of his cover of Take It Easy, and the shoot went so well that the guys are like, you know what? Might be nice if we get back together. In secret, they recorded an episode of MTV's Unplugged at a film studio in Burbank, and on May 27th, played their first live show together publicly in almost 14 years. The tour would come together as Hell Freezes Over and would be huge, selling $63 million in ticket sales for 58 shows, even though tickets were over $100, which is adorable today, but was considered outrageous at the time. And if your favorite boomer band is now charging hundreds of dollars to go see them, that's because the Eagles set the precedent. And it really goes to show, no matter how bad things can seem in a band, in a friend group, and in a family, even if hell's gotta be really chilly and frozen over to make it happen, there's always a chance to reunite. And as if we couldn't get even softer with that, here's the last song they all played together on that tour. It's Desperado. But you know what? I'm gonna play it anyways because it's a very fitting message based on our story.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt.
I'm gonna start this off with a bit of an opinion here, and I don't think it's too controversial of a one. King of the Hill is perhaps one of the most underrated adult animation TV shows of all time, period. Underneath that overtly dry sense of humor, man, you got yourself a pretty funny ass show. And that has been helped in no small part by an absolute litany of guest stars. I mean, you got Chris Rock, Troy Aikman, the recurring gag that Chuck Mangione, jazz trumpetist, can't get a job that isn't Adam major department store. But perhaps the biggest guest star of all time, in terms of impact, playing themselves or otherwise, is Tom Petty, who of course played Luann's hillbilly boyfriend turned husband, Lucky. And what's so great about this casting is just how strange it feels from the outset. For anybody who discovers it for the first time, picture it. This is the man who did albums like Full Moon Fever, Damn the Torpedoes, American Girl, and meanwhile he's talking like this.
True story. I was at Costco one day and all of a sudden the nature called. Yelled is more like it. So I hightailed it into the John and there's some sensitive guy changing his little boy's diaper on one of them baby ironing boards. And don't you know I slipped on pee-pee and broke two vertebrae which had to be fused together? I'm in constant pain, but by God, I got me a $53,000 settlement.
So, real talk here. How did Tom Petty end up playing the hillbilly with a heart of gold that taught us all the great stuff about slipping in Costco for cash settlements, redneck lumber fights, and the code of being an educated man before you get married unless you have a shotgun pointed at you? Well, according to Mike Judge, in a 2009 interview with the Chicago Tribune, he was talking with John Altshuler, who was the guy running the show for the last 7 or 8 years of the series. And together they'd written up a character named Lucky. And how Mike Judge pitched it is, hey, picture this, Tom Petty, but without any success, just Gainesville, Florida trash. They get the idea, hey, why don't we just call Tom Petty and see if he'll do it? The worst he can do is say no. But Tom Petty didn't say no. In fact, he loved the character and said yes. Absolutely killed it at the table read. He gets hired up right away and says, anytime you want me to be Lucky, I'm gonna be Lucky. So instantly, he becomes a recurring character and a fan favorite pretty right out of the gate. But according to Petty himself, he didn't have to do too much research. He said he knew who Lucky was pretty well. Very philosophical. He's a philosophical idiot. And perhaps half jokingly, he says his family was more impressed with his spin as Lucky than his music career, at least the kids who were watching King of the Hill. But in a true testament to his character, even though he was only on the show for 25 episodes of a 259 episode series, he's still a fan favorite. That is some staying power. But also, in an ironic turn of events, there is a Tom Petty song out there named King of the Hill. Actually, it's a Roger McGuinn song, but Tom Petty is the backing vocals on it. That's got nothing to do with the show. In fact, it was written in 1987, and the reason he did it with Roger McGuinn is because he and McGuinn liked the fact that both of them had similar sounding voices. Very similar, in fact, which you can hear on that track, King of the Hill. I'm gonna play it for you now, and you can just tell me the difference.
It's sunrise again. The driveway is empty. The crystal is cracked, and there's blood on the wall. And when Monday comes round, there's a high lonesome sound, and she follows you down for the kill.
Sadly, that's the end of another Liner Note Leftovers. As always, it's been a blast digging through the racks with you, laying down some records, and laying down some even more weird stories. We learned how a reunion is never out of the question, even if it's such a battle of wills as the Eagles circa 1980. We now know why that copy of Kiss Super Special Marvel Comics number 1 has that weird blood smell to it. It was not used to mop up a crime scene. It was slightly weirder than that. And we paid some respect to some absolute legends, of course, the great Ronnie James Dio, the great Tom Petty, the great Glenn Frey, the great Brittany Murphy, and all those other legends that are still with us. Next week, we got an all brand new Liner Note Leftovers coming for you. And as always, if you've got a story you want told on Liner Note Leftovers, you can always hit me up, 1061 The Goat on various social medias. You can email me, danielmsoul@gmail.com. And those stories do get aired. In fact, that Tom Petty story, that was a little suggestion from my boy Mike Prusky. Big respect to that guy. I love watching him get in his first few baby steps as he learns the history of rock and roll. And also, don't forget, leave us a little rating on your favorite podcast app. That helps out the show a ton, and it takes you 3 seconds to click the stars. You think I'm great? You think I'm crap? I want to hear about it because it makes this show so much better. I love y'all. I'll see you next week, and don't forget, always grab your life and your vinyl by the edges.
That's a wrap on this week's episode. For more musical discoveries with Dan Soul, head to myloydminsternow.com or subscribe to Liner Note Leftovers wherever you get your podcast fix.